Good morning. This is the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. 4341-790-266-4862. Or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. John Stout is taking care of things technical. Dennis Johnson, I'm your host, and we will go until 2 o'clock this afternoon with our usual breaks for the regional roundup at 5 to noon. We go tracking the latest at noon. We have network news from Flo at about 5 minutes after noon. The latest at 12:30, and then we continue until 2. In the midst of our fight to control the spread of COVID-19, we have good news on the front that we have more people out of isolation and a second week with no confirmed new cases, and we hope that continues. We welcome back our nationals from overseas, and we hope that they respect the period of quarantine. We hope that they're all COVID-free and that they can resume their lives in Barbados at the end of their period of quarantine. In the midst of that news, we also have the news that the public servants continue to be appraised of what will happen when the boss becomes effective, and that the IMF has released some more funds into our coffers. Carl Moore keeps asking the question, I think I have to join him in this, if it's called the foreign reserves, why do we refer to it in Barbados dollars? Supposed to be the foreign reserves. We keep referring to it in Barbados dollars and then put in US dollars in brackets thereafter. But what was interesting for me was the comments made by the deputy managing director of the IMF, who said that accommodation in fiscal year 2020-21 would be compensated by higher primary surpluses in the medium term to ensure that the debt target of 60% of GDP in the final year, 2033-34, is reached. So the primary surplus was reduced to 1% because of the COVID pandemic, but the IMF anticipates that we will increase it and continue to increase it so that we reach that 60% target by 2033-34. So we still got to use the parlance of the former prime minister and the gentleman who is producing, because apparently he used to ride the jockey, got keep the weight under control. He says, correct. Thank you, John. He also said it was essential for government to, and it's in quotation marks, reform state-owned enterprises through a raft of budget cuts, reduced public funding, mergers, and sales. Now, this has been said on more than one occasion, but for some strange reason, we can't bring the state-owned enterprises under control. We're not cutting their budget. I don't know that the public funding has been reduced. I saw the CBC asking for people to merge with them in the midst of the COVID in a classified, or in the place where classified ads usually occur. I don't think we've had sales of the SOEs yet. He also said to secure fiscal space for investment in physical and human capital, transfers to the SOEs need to decline after the global coronavirus pandemic. Now, I don't know when that will be, but it must be done with a combination of stronger oversight, cost reduction, revenue enhancement, mergers and divestment. In other words, the same thing that he said before, he's repeated, but in another way. Progress in restoring fiscal sustainability must be safeguarded by adopting a new central bank law that limits its financing of the government to short-term advances and strengthens the central bank mandate, autonomy, and decision-making structures. In short, don't let them print money. And a strong recovery after the global pandemic will depend on accelerating structural reforms. There is much room for improvement in the business climate, establishing a credit registry, credit collateral registry, in addition to broadening the types of eligible collateral would facilitate access to credit. And then he added the piece about natural disasters and climate change. That was interesting because the former governor of the central bank, now released of his constraints by reporting to the Minister of Finance, also outlined his plan, which included reform of the public sector, something that he says is better than a boss. And he said that it should have been part of the IMF discussions. So you could have said to your public service, is the IMF that tell us to send you home? Rather than saying, we have a locally grown plan that says, let's get the private, the public sector ready for the 21st century. We continue to play these games with words. And we continue to pretend that we do not know what the problem is. We know what the problem is. What we lack is the will to get it done because we do not want to have people going home with nothing to do. And because we do not have a private sector or another sector that would mass employ our people like the sugar industry did, like the hotel sector did, we are struggling with what to do with a public sector that no longer fits the requirement of 2020 and beyond. That's the problem. Providing employment for people, meaningful employment, developing ways to grow the economy by earning foreign exchange. We use all sorts of fancy terms. I don't use them because some of it is beyond my grasp. They sound nice when you say it, but sometimes they don't mean anything. Here's my little spiel. Let's talk. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hi.
This is Glenn Marie.
Yes, sir. Good morning to you.
And thank you very much for, in your usual manner, breaking down all that, seeing through and cutting through all the jargon, all the cliches, all the gobbledygook, all the bureaucraties, the language of the IMF and whatnot. Because when I think it through, just like you, all it to me spells is more austerity for the foreseeable future. Plain and simple. And I take comfort from that by looking at next door at Jamaica. Jamaica has had innumerable IMF programs since the late 70s, early 80s. And Jamaica, as far as I know, is not getting any stronger, any weak, any wealthier, whatever. So, you know, that's the power of the game. But I don't want to, that was not my main focus of concern today. Sometimes you see little things in the paper or here in the news that offers you hope. Mm-hmm. There's a small item in today's paper about two persons being brought before the courts for
noise.
Creating a public nuisance through loud music.
Noise, yeah. Yeah, I saw that.
Loud music. I said, wow. Oh, that triggered a sense of hope in my chest regarding the loud music nuisance. And I wonder whether this only relates to COVID. Maybe it's related to the curfew of COVID, or whether it's just a general thing that we're beginning to see. Maybe I'm hoping this is the beginning of action against loud music. And I can only wish a person myself, like Carl Moore or others, who object. I also suffer from it from time to time. That this is the beginning of things to get better as we go ahead. But also, another news that hasn't come in the public recently, but it's still much there, the question of kites. Kites is still very much a problem, and I on a couple of cases, I suggested we enlist the use of drones along with police to locate kites so we can get after them. But then I remembered that there was a social problem in Barbados in the 70s, up to the 70s, 75, 78, 79, I think it was. Remember when we celebrated Guy Fawkes Day? Were you in Barbados for Guy Fawkes Day?
So, yeah, when we had, not only did we have fireworks, but we also had bombs and various other things that as a young boy we used to have fun with.
You used to call it fun, but...
As I said, it was fun for me because I engaged in it. I plead guilty, Your Honor, sir.
But it's only as the technology increase and the sophistication of the items for quote unquote celebration.
And the closeness of the houses too made a difference. We had some open spaces in those days we don't have now.
And it terrorized Barbadians,
yes,
over the folk, the animals, children, because fellas would get very adventurous and reckless. And I remember the fellas who would walk around and put bombs in the gallipurks.
I plead guilty.
They'd be walking around and then explode them at the feet. It was horrible.
Sir, I know a group of gentlemen who are now, I think, respectable members of the society, including lawyers, who would go to the Fairchild Street Market. The old ladies would have ice blocks in a flask.
Right.
One gentleman would step up and offer to buy a ice block, and when the lady opened the flask, drop a bomb in it and run off.
They
considered it fun, right?
Yeah.
Of and course, it was, looking back on it now, you know, it's terror. It's called terror.
And in truth, in fact, it was very irrelevant to Barbados because it really was marking the 1605 collapse
of the London.
The Fox in England.
Yeah.
But
we were little England, so we were mirroring it.
But then Tom Adams stepped in. And I put an end to it. And people were saying, you can't stop it, what we can do. If you look back now, what has become of Guy Fawkes Day? There's a generation of people, at least one and a half,
two,
who do not know anything about Guy Fawkes Day.
Correct.
In other words, I'm sure when we want to tackle a serious social problem or give serious action that it can be done.
Mm.
And Guy Fawkes is worse than even kites. I was all over Barbados on that particular day and night, and it was hell for a person. And I would therefore, if we can have a similar approach to the question of kites,
mm-hmm,
I think it can be done.
Yeah.
But one good thing about the abolition of Guy Fawkes is that the good thing that came with that was the mushrooming of conkeys, remember? Conkeys and stewed dumplings, as it were called, to come on
a name
day
that you're happy with. No, let me say to you, the challenge that I have here, Glenn, is this. Over a period of time, we have found sophisticated methods of measuring noise. There are meters that can tell you decibel levels. Doctors have come up with levels that are palatable,
right,
levels that won't upset the human psyche. It varies from person to person, yes, but we know. And we have meters we have instruments that can measure it. What other countries have done, including countries in the Caribbean, been to legislate a decibel level.
It right.
Says this level of noise is acceptable up to this time. After that, this level of noise is not acceptable. And therefore, law enforcement can go into an area where there is noise, measure the decibel level, and say to the person, you are creating a nuisance because you've gone above this level. The fear I have is if we carry people to court for making noise and some very astute lawyer decides to argue what is noise and how you decide it's a nuisance, you may not be solving the problem. All you'll be doing is tying up the courts with legal arguments. I find sometimes that we fail to take basic steps to ensure that those who offend can be properly prosecuted and that the result can be seen by all as being justice. And
but
it is confusing our system right across the board, from finding a man with one bullet as opposed to finding a man with a container full of arms. You can't tell me it's the same thing as having ammunition. One bullet could kill a man, but, you know.
I have a slightly different perspective, too. I see that with all the technology available today, in cell phones and whatnot, that there must be apps that people can use themselves to gauge, that the police can have in their phone, that when they go to report, that they themselves can monitor it, record it there and then, and use it. We are now having electronic recordings, mm-hmm, electronic interviews and questioning to
correct.
Go before the court.
And we're going virtual court. Yeah.
Virtual court. So why can't that same technology be applied to things like noise, where the evidence is readily available, and the police who answer the call can record it, make a note of it, and proceed from there against the background of the legislation that you said would have been put in place to set the limit, time, and decibel levels for these very occurrences.
The only challenge with that, Glenn, is this. Most of the young producers in Barbados can tell you it is possible to lift the decibel level and enhance it on your phone, on your computer, on your laptop, etc. So it is possible that I could record something and enhance it to tell the police's noise. Whereas if they come with a meter and check, they can see that there is above the level. That's the only challenge. And that was the one that held up the whole question of recorded recordings being used in evidence, because you can edit and enhance. And that's the only challenge I see. But I think it's a step in the right direction. If we move to have these things in a piece of legislation that is easy to uphold, rather than these little things that we keep having lawyers arguing over and going all to CCJ and various things to try to work around, because they know how to manipulate the law.
Yeah. All right.
Thank you very much, sir, for your comments. Always good to hear from you. WhatsApp message tackling me here about my comment. I was making specific references to certain state-owned corporations that were said they were going to be managed, and I mentioned the Caribbean Broadcasting Corporation specifically, because that's one of those that came up. People were sent home, and it was supposed to be restructured. I picked on that one. You also had the case of the BIDC, where people were sent on early retirement, and that's still logging around somewhere between tribunal and various things. The problem is that our state-owned enterprises have not been restructured in a coordinated manner that seems to be heading in the direction that the IMF wants us to go. That's why he mentioned it not once, but twice. If we were doing it the right way, the fellow from the IMF would not have mentioned it twice. Why my people can't understand an elbow nudge before the hammer comes down? Twice. I only read in the report. I write it. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
Hey.
Good morning, sir. How are you?
I am all right, sir. How are you?
I'm fine, my brother.
Mm-hmm.
Good morning, John. Good morning to all listeners. Greetings to one and all. As I listen to the administration of our country, we can see that the Prime Minister and her cabinet is trying their best to bring some relief to us citizens. But as we can see, there are limitations. We all yearn to be peaceful and to be happy and to live in tranquility. But due to our imperfection, we find ourselves struggling to bring things to a better cause. But all is not lost, because the Creator, who created us, promises us there will be a better life. Let's look at what he said by means of the prophet Isaiah, Isaiah 32, verse 18. My people will dwell in a peaceful abiding place, in secure dwelling, and in tranquil resting places. To some people, this may be a stretch of the imagination. Some people think that this is what life is to be. We come into the world, we get a job, or get an education, we get a job, we make ourselves good, and then dead. But when we get the different challenges that affect us, it's something, so that's part and part of life. But that is not the case. It was never ever Jehovah's decision or idea to create a world to put us in, to go through all of these challenges. And he have a time set aside to remove all of these obstacles in all ways so that we could dwell in tranquility and security. But in order to do that, we need to make some changes in our life. Because it also says, at the prevailing verse, verse 17, the result of true righteousness will be peace. So in order for mankind to truly enjoy peace and lasting peace, you have to make some changes, and you will do that by reading God's word, letting it guide you, and Jehovah God will provide guidance for you.
Thank you very much, sir. I have received three very disturbing pictures here from someone on WhatsApp who says, this is the road leading to Fall Bay. It's very bad and in need of repairs. Two shots of the road. And why is it people leave their homes and dump their garbage at the beach? And then there's a very disturbing picture of a mess on the beach. Bags, boxes, what looks like discarded cartons they would see apples in. It's a really horrible sight. Questions I cannot answer, sir. But obviously, it says what we think of our environment and our nation and our health and our neighbors. 434-1790, Brass Tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Dennis.
How are you, sir?
Not too bad.
Good.
I must compliment you on yesterday's program.
You do?
It was very informative and educational.
Why, thank you, sir.
And I'm hoping that today we'll do the same thing. At least you started off in that vein where you try to educate people about all the jargon and what the main purpose of what we consider the IMF. Now, in reading my book on by France, one of the extracts from France Fanon, he said, in most developed countries, the greatest wealth is surrounded by the greatest poverty. You listen to that quotation?
I did.
The greatest wealth is surrounded by the greatest poverty. I today, after COVID, we are exposed to a position where it surprised a lot of people, where this country is living a lie. And when I say living a lie, 5 weeks into dormancy of activity has proven that the population of this country has a real pocket of poverty. And I don't know how we're going to attack it, because you hear the minister spoke about she never realized there was so much poverty. Nearly every minister telling you that they don't know there's so much poverty. Yet they are.
Because the definition of poverty, sir, perhaps changes depending on the the metrics used. That's why I made the comment about jargon. Eh? Because let me say this to you. If I make $1,000 a week, but my expenses are only $500 a week. I could save $500 per week. $500 a week by 4 weeks in a month is $2,000. I can't be said to be poor. I may be holding on. I may be managing my affairs well, but I may not consider myself poor. I could be making $8,000 a month. But because my expenses are $15,000 a month, I break. But to the man who's making $1,000 a week and making do, he look at me at $8,000 and say, geez, on his Dennis Johnson's a millionaire.
Yeah.
So when I made the comment to one of my callers about how you spend the money you get, and you tell me, you know, it's not that, and we disagreed. So the problem with our poverty in Barbados is twofold. One, we have people who live above their means, and people do not consider it to be poverty. They consider it that they live in too big. They got champagne taste and mobby pocket. We have some people who have no income, little income, struggling to survive, and don't beg because they're too proud to beg, or they don't want to go through the hassle of having people ask them all kind of questions, ask them if their family can help them, ask them what they do that they end up so, and all the other things they just tell them, right? And those people sit and struggle and struggle and struggle until the house collapses around them. They shut off the electricity and they're living in the dark. They're not eating properly. That's what I call poverty, sir. And there are people there. And they sometimes slip through the cracks because they don't jump up and make noise.
Yeah, let me go on. Mm-hmm. Now, this, you have brought something into the limelight yesterday. I heard when you mentioned the fight, the struggle of the blacks in America. You went all back down to Martin Luther King.
To 1960, yes, sir.
Exactly. What I am seeing that happening in this country, I was wrong from the days of Grantley Adams, who was the first premier, up to now. And what I have realized, that especially as a person asks who you think is the most, I would say, successful prime minister, and you say you are not getting into that.
Because I don't measure prime ministers that way.
Right. Now let me say this. Each prime minister or leader had a goal, or should have a goal. And the assets, because I could remember listening to, and I'm sorry, I can't get hold of Ralph Gonzalez. I listened to Ralph Gonzalez lecturing. I listened to El Barr. I never listened to Tom in that sense. But what I am seeing, that the ideology of the late Earl Warren Barr was to reduce taxation by having assets and making the assets work to bring in income. So you would remove the taxes off or the burden off the ordinary worker. Tom Allen did something similar by creating activities like the Central, like the Barbados National Bank, the
CBL, and all those. Yeah, that the gentleman mentioned yesterday.
Yeah, that will bring in assets so that you won't have to tax. You won't have to tax the average man because you will have income coming in that you can spend on the people. There is a reverse now that happening throughout the Caribbean. We have people are telling you about the private sector economy are being driven by the private sector. Yet at the same time, the central government have to produce the income to the private sector, and the population or the society produce the labor to the private sector. But there, we have people who are telling the nation or nations that they cannot run, a government cannot run the entities, but yet the private sector can run it with the same labor force. And as a result, the outcome of that is that the workers are paying a very high price. And right now, I am saying that it is dwindling. The power of the worker is dwindling, assisted by the trade union. And I say that, and I can left it out there because, Dennis, I prefer to listen. But I still want to put in a little wood in the fire to let people think. And last but not least, we are getting money from the IMF. Mm-hmm. We were talking about loans and how indebted the country is. When we get all of these millions of dollars and you're not putting it in a productive area to make back some of the money that you borrow, what is going to happen with the country, Dennis?
We can end up having to pay and pay and pay, and we will find ourselves in a debt spiral that takes us right back to where we were when Bert was first introduced.
Well, I didn't want to give that answer.
Why?
I know.
People prefer me because they could pelt rocks at me, but that's all right. So let me say this to you.
I know. Let me say this to you.
Yeah, I know. Right? I know. You push the wood in the fire and step back for it to blaze. It's okay. As the fireman.
I keep asking you and asking the Almighty to give you more time on this.
Was you all doing this to me?
Yes, to help enlighten the masses. Because you are not one of those with an agenda. But remember, I tell you that you're going like top of your class. You don't have an agenda. You talk to the nation.
I plan to.
Thank you this morning. Dennis,
thank you, sir. I plan to shut this down by starting a program called the Johnson Agenda. If I could get somebody to sponsor it so people know that I have an agenda. Look, let me say to you, sir, here's the problem. Taxation is a twofold thing. Taxation can be used to curb the public's appetite for foreign exchange and to dampen the effects to consume things that the country is not ready to pay for in foreign currency. Taxation can be used for that. Taxation could be used to finance domestic expansion. So in other words, you want to do work within the Barbadian economy. You want to do work using Barbadian labor, Barbadian inputs. There is no need to reach for foreign capital to do it. So you could tax your people. You're paying Barbados dollars circulating in Barbados. You don't have a problem with it. The development of industries, institutions, to be able to generate foreign capital is something that prime ministers have worked on over a period of time. What happens, however, is when the brilliant minds sit and say, you know what, rather than going through all these problems to do that, if a foreign entity or a private entity owns it, they could expend their capital, they could expend their energies to get foreign investors, they could build it up. All we got to do is tax them, and we get the same revenue to do what we want to do. So let them handle the heavy work. The problem for me has always been, when we ask private enterprise to be our tax collectors, when we say to private enterprise, you take the tax for us and then send the tax to me, and they don't do it, and we tell them, well, you know, you're too big for us to shut you down. You're a grown child now, so we can't put you across with knee and spank you, so we forgive you your debt. And then turn around and ask me to pay it all over again. I have a problem with that. And we've done this consistently. We've raised the PAYE. We've removed the allowances that we were given. We were made to pay our way again. But the entities that we ask to be tax collectors, we tell them, oh, it's all right. You know, we ain't doing you nothing. You too big to fail. You could pull out and we can be in trouble. I got a problem with that. Right? We said that tax was a disincentive. And this is the one, two things I'll mention, and then I'm going to shut up. Or I'm going to try to. There were people who worked on commission basis. They worked hard for their commissions. So they got 100,000, 120,000, some got more than prime ministers. Right? They were heavily taxed. So they said, you know what? This is a disincentive for me to work. I'm working hard, I'm making money, but you're taking my money out in taxes. So we tell them, all right, we'll lower your tax. We're going to give you an entertainment allowance. We're going to give you a travel allowance. We're going to give you a telephone allowance. We're going to give you these allowances. So you put these allowances in, you lower your tax threshold, and you take home some more money so you could expand the house and send your children to school and so on and so on and so on. So they settle for that. They build a big house, they buy the big car, the children doing all right, they're going on vacation, then we take it back. So it goes back to being a disincentive for them to work. So once they get to 50,000, they decide, you know what? If I go over 50,000, you're taxing me, I don't work for the week. I make enough. So you have people who are non-productive because it does not pay to be productive. We haven't solved that problem yet. Perhaps now they can't sell anything in the current environment, so we send them home. The second thing that has been on my mind for a while, and I mentioned it once, and somebody brought it up, and then it disappeared again. There's a place on Bay Street that's being dismantled. It's called Liquidation Center. Twice, the proprietor of Liquidation Center said that they have $7 million worth of goods in there. Twice. What happens if when they go to the containers where all these things that were in there stored, The proprietor says, I only have $250,000 worth of goods here. Where are my $7 million? What are we going to do at that point? Because I don't know if anybody took inventory. I don't know if anybody took cost and whether it was signed off on. So when we finish with COVID and we finish with IMF and we finish with BOSS, let's go into the CCJ again with lawyers and lawsuits and $7 million hanging over the heads of the taxpayers of Barbados. That's all I can say. Brass Sax, good morning.
Yes, Mr. Johnson?
Yes, sir.
How are you today, man?
Alive?
You had a good program yesterday.
So I keep hearing.
I was on the program.
And that's why it was good? Okay.
Okay. I was a part of it.
Yeah, I get the voice now.
What were I calling you for, right? I have never said, I want to listen to me. I know you want to listen, but you do listen. That's why I like to talk to you. I have never said that heaven is not mentioned in the Bible. I have never said that. And I understood that somebody called and said that. The person said that.
The last person. Yeah, the last person called yesterday.
But I have never said that, Mr. Johnson. I said, and I can reiterate what I said. I said that the people who are Christians and who die, and when the resurrection, they be caught up, and they believe they're going to heaven. But there's no part in the King James Version.
And that's why I said to him that he said he did not know what Bible you were reading. And the last thing I said to him was that you quoted which one you were reading from.
I did that.
Because I listened.
And also, I quoted, I can't understand why he quoted the passage that he quoted about the dead in Christ shall rise and we that remain shall be caught up. Because I had quoted that, if you remember. I have quoted that testimony. I quoted that. If you remember, you check it, you say, I quoted that. And the Bible said, when they be caught up, they will meet him in the ear. If he want to move the word from ear and put half of it, I don't know. You listen to me?
So I told you, I listen. Why do you think I can answer the gentleman? Why do you think I can answer the gentleman yesterday after he made all the quotations and said what he said? And he said the last thing we said before we went to the break was, I do not know what Bible he was reading. And I said the gentleman said which one he was reading and quoting from.
Mr. Johnson, he quoted someplace in Revelation that John saw the new Jerusalem coming down from heaven.
Yes, sir, he did.
He didn't understand where the new Jerusalem would come down from heaven. John was in the eyes of Patmos. He had a vision and the present things like the new Jerusalem were coming down. But they were coming down for a reason. The reason is that there's a Jerusalem now, and that Jerusalem would be in existence at that time. The saints would be caught up in the air, as the Bible said. The Bible tell me, don't add nor subtract from it. So if he wanted add or subtract, he can do that. But I still maintain, Mr. Johnson, that anybody in the world to find the passage that says that the saints after the dead and the resurrected, after the rapture, they will go to heaven. The Bible said the meek shall inherit the earth, Matthew 5:5. Revelation, you read it where the saints, Revelation, I think it's 5:8, will tell you where the saints can be. And if you read these things, you'll understand. There's one thing I want to make clear here today, because somebody may want to butt in, because you know religion and politics, they're two funny subjects. And you always get problems when we butt. There's one thing I want to say. There's a part, it's John 14, I think John 14 verse 1, something like that, says that Jesus said, this is what the Bible said, and I'm saying it. Jesus said that I go to prepare a place for you, and if I go, I will come again and to receive you unto myself, that where I am, ye shall also be. People do not understand that. I do not know why.
So because interpretations are open to people's ability to grasp what's being said. And that's one of the reasons why religious arguments always end up with, I understand better than you do, or I am inspired to interpret and you are not, and my interpretation is correct and yours is not. And that's the reason you actually made the comment that there always is a rebuttal, because there are different levels at which people comprehend what they read, and there are those who claim divine inspiration, while others claim it's inspired by the Antichrist and, you know, the various other names they give to those who don't follow their teachings. Always good to hear you, sir, and nice to engage with you. The WhatsApp message says, on the issue of the noise that was brought up by Mr. Murray, if an app is developed, which I'm sure they already exist, is that every phone brand will not be made with the same. Microphone specifications will not be the same over brands, and that each recorded noise level will not be the same. Pointed that out to Glenia. I've also asked the same question with reference to the radar speed detectors. What brands specified in law, if their use are in fact lawful, and what's the plus or minus tolerances allowed? How often are they or should they be calibrated to maintain the integrity? Good questions. I know there were questions raised about the radar gun on more than one occasion. Yesterday, for example, people were asking about the temperature, the thermometers being used, the, you know, pointing at people's forehead. And there are several in operation. I was told this morning by my security officer, thank you, Dexter, for the information, that the one here, used by our security team, 3 to 5 centimeter distance, which is rather close. He said there's some that go up to 3 feet. So it depends on what type of instrument you're using, the distance to that the instrument can be held from your face to check your temperature varies depending on the type of instrument used. So, same thing, I suppose, with most of these instruments, whether it's the radar gun. I heard of one case where almost everybody who was charged with speeding was charged with exceeding it by the same amount, and somebody questioned if the gun was working at all. I think all the people who were charged that day got off. That's the story. I don't know whether it's true or not. These stories, you know, pass across my face from time to time, and I resist the temptation to raise them because, as I said to them, in this business, believe half of what you see, none of what you hear. But the point I was making to Glenn that I'm trying to make again is that if you have a good lawyer, he can ask questions like this. You know, when last was the gun checked? How accurate is it over distance X or Y? How many people today have been charged with exceeding the speed limit by the same amount? And then you get into complications and people walk. 434-1790-266-4862. You can send a WhatsApp message to that. I can't listen to WhatsApp voice notes on BrassTacks. Or you can send an email to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. John Stout, technical operator, producer. Dennis Johnson, your host. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Johnson. How are you this morning? I hope you're safe and well.
Trying to be.
Yes. Now, I usually call in a very different capacity, wearing a different hat. But today, I'm actually calling as a black woman with a black son who happens to live in a much metropolitan, predominantly white country. And I'm also calling as a citizen of the world. I say that having had lived and worked and experienced the United States, Australia, USA, etc. Now, I consider it more than significant that there is no evidence of an organized group to show solidarity with the present movement in the world, not just in the United States, standing on a call for justice for the horrendous, depraved act of stuffing out George Floyd's life and numerous others, and calling for eradication of the systemic racism that we know exists and has existed for 400 years. Now, we don't live in a bubble here in Barbados. We live as part of a world. Every single thing that happens to us, happens out there, impacts us, and especially as a predominantly black country. And so, you know, it is really significant, or more than significant, to note that we are not having, we therefore need to raise our consciousness level as Barbadians more than ever. And what concerns me, what triggered this, is when I see predominantly white countries having a show of solidarity in protests and demonstrations, such as Finland. Finland is 99.70% white. Italy, Berlin, even Tel Aviv, incredible. And I keep saying from the time it started, where are the blacks in the diaspora for, who need to be part of this moment in time, a pivotal moment in time to change the system that has demoralized black people for hundreds of years? And so my call is to say that, as a matter of fact, the response by a senior moderator of this program, who's known to be always well-informed, and I would say has great arguments at all levels for on any topic. A caller some earlier this week, I think it was or last week, when this whole protest started, called in and made a suggestion that why isn't the Caribbean having a show of solidarity? And the response was that could be seen or taken as interference. Now, a show of solidarity from Finland, how come Finland, Tel Aviv, Toronto, now South Africa, South Africa has recently come up, how come they're not considering it interference? This is a world movement. We have here in our country an impressive humanitarian, and I will not call the name, who's recognized internationally for his acts on humanitarian issues. And we also have a number of black consciousness activists. Why haven't they organized some type of organized demonstration?
They have.
And I know within the restrictions of COVID.
They have.
They have?
Correct.
Oh, so when
10 of them have asked the police and the Attorney General and has been granted permission to picket the United States Embassy in Barbados.
Well, why has that not been announced to us? And why only 10? What about
Because they wanted, the people who made the request wanted to do it in front of the U.S. Embassy. Because of COVID restrictions and spacing, and the police said, this is a matter that will have to be handled above our level. The Attorney General has said, yes, they've been given permission to do it. Now, I can't tell you why they only said 10. I can't tell you why they chose the U.S. Embassy. I can't answer those questions. I could only tell you what I know. And that's what I do
know. Thank you for that information. The U.S. Embassy would be a very good point to do it at, a target point. But why not let the public know then? The show of solidarity that has been organized. Never, I understand the restrictions as a healthcare professional myself and all that. But let us know then what is happening, so we can engage in this as well. It's a world movement, and it's a pivotal point in time that we need to not let. So I'm very impressed that they have made that organized group, and I would like to find out more. Is it possible to get more information on that?
Ma'am, all you have to do is do what I do, which is read. That's all you have to do, because that's the only way I found out. Nobody called me, nobody told me, nobody sent me a WhatsApp message. I read it.
I would love to call... Sir, Mr. Johnson, I would love to call on those persons who are those activists to come to the forum here and perhaps give us some more information that we could even, apart from the actual physical demonstration, wonderful, that we could continue a conversation in that regard in some forum or something of the sort, because we need to keep this burning. I'm really passionate about this.
I realize that.
So thank you so much.
Thank you as well, ma'am.
Okay.
Brass Tacks, good morning. Hello.
Oh, good morning.
Yes, sir.
Dennis Clay, Terry.
Hey, Clay, how are you, man?
Yeah, yesterday I was making some points when we got cut off to go to the Prime Minister. So I decided I would call back in the day to try and finish
what you were saying. Yeah,
check up one or two other points that I heard listening to the program while I was holding on. As I was saying, that one of the things that we need to do, if we're not going to be earning foreign exchange, since the tourism industry is at a virtual standstill, we need to look and increase our food production so that we can reduce food imports. I think last year we imported some $680 million. And the same thing as it relates to solar, voltaic, electricity generation, because we imported $880 million in fossil fuels last year. In 2019, so if we can produce 50% of our electricity from buildings and photovoltaic farms, that would be a saving of $440 million. When you subtract the cost, the investment cost of getting the the cells and so on set up.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that is the direction that we should go in, because as I was saying yesterday, the people who would normally help us in a situation where our tourism is affected, they have been affected in some instances worse than we have been affected,
mm-hmm.
and therefore are not in a position to help us. So we are going to have to start and help ourselves. So those are the points I wanted to make in that regard. I also want to mention something about garbage collection. And I know the Fall Bay area very well. I'm from St. Philip. I used to go there swimming and swim off and there to go spear fishing and dig shag and all kind of thing in my younger days.
Mm-hmm.
So I know the area very well. And for the longest time, it has been used as a dumping ground. The road is in terrible shape and has been in terrible shape for some time.
But why would people use it to dump then? They would drive over that
I suspect a fella got down there in a truck to dump. He figured the police ain't going to bring a decent vehicle down
to
there.
To go down behind him?
To come behind him. So because they bring back a truck or something, they get stuck up.
Or they might mash up the vehicle trying to follow him. Fair enough.
Exactly. So that's the only reason I can think. Because the area is quite beautiful. And it really needs to be kept clean. I remember some time ago the cleanup, some of the trees and things that were hanging over. And they used to put a skip down there at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't gone there for a little while now, so I'm not sure what the situation is with the skip. But the point I'm making is this. The government and the Ministry of the Environment has to carry some of the blame for this illegal dumping because of the inconsistent collection of garbage in this country. In my particular case, in my neighborhood, and I've mentioned this before publicly, I used to get a garbage collection every Monday without fail. If the Monday was a bank holiday, you got it the Thursday of that week, but certainly you got it the following Monday. Then in one instance last year, I went to 6 weeks, consecutively 6 weeks for a collection to the point where my family got together with our neighbors and hired skips because we could not keep up with the amount of garbage that was in our avenue. Now, 4 weeks ago, I was home. Garbage collection came out. One of the members on the truck, I said, "We're glad to see you," because that Monday, that day when it was collected, that was week three. I'm talking about, this is no June, I'm talking about May and April of this year. I'm bidding new trucks, and the $1.3 million is being collected every month, or used to be collected every month prior to the COVID-19. And the trucks, the importation of trucks,
mm-hmm.
I was told by one of the helpers on the truck, we are going to get a garbage collection every other Thursday.
Right.
I said to my neighbors who were not at home and they came home, I said the garbage collection, I was advised by a staff member from the SS here, that garbage will be collected every other Thursday. Now, I can live with that. I know when it comes in, so I can package my garbage and put it away. Keep it in my backyard in a covered container until the Thursday morning early. I can put out the truck. I can put out the garbage because sometimes the truck will come at 6:30 and 7 o'clock, which is quite early. So sometimes I would even put it out the Wednesday night.
Hmm.
Okay.
Has it been happening?
I'll get into that. Last week before, I did not put out the garbage because it was the first Thursday after, and the truck came out. So I had garbage in my yard. So if the cycle is going to be correct, it would now be 3 weeks. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Did you follow what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
No. It is Thursday morning now,
mm-hmm.
11 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I have not seen a garbage. I have not seen a garbage collection yet, which is a little bit unusual because when they come into my avenue, they usually come anytime between 7 and 10.
Come early.
So if it is not collected today, then I don't know when it will be collected. And if it is not collected today, I am going to get a skip, put the garbage in the skip. The small skip is $145. And for the next 3 months, I am not paying the garbage and sewage collection tax, and I will get my attorneys to file a writ in the Supreme Court of Barbados to seek an injunction against the Barbados Water Authority from disconnecting my water supply for the non-collection of garbage.
That's drastic action indeed, because I know it is something you've raised on more than one occasion, and you've gone through the various cycles that you've and action you had to be taken. I'm disappointed at two levels, however, with the idea that having removed at one point the tipping fee to allow people to be able to go to the landfill and dump things that people prefer to take, go off track and put things in secluded areas or put it on the beach. And then pictures taken and circulated to show that the area is in a mess. It paints a picture of Barbados that is not the Barbados I know, is not the Barbados I like to be a part of. And it shows an indifference for the environment, for law and order. And I don't know. I don't know why we've reached this stage, and I hope we find a way out of it, like the broken tracks that we go down to do this kind of thing in a rail fast. But I give up hope. And when all hope is gone, you know, all hope is gone.